John chapter 20, John is concluding his gospel that he has written about Jesus and who Jesus is and the things that Jesus did all the way to his sacrifice on the cross. He's recorded miracles. He's recorded the proof of Jesus being the Christ. And he says in John 20 and in verse 30, many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ. All the things he has written is for this purpose, that you can believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing, you may have life in his name. When you read through the Gospels, we need to understand this is the purpose as to why these things have been written for us. They haven't been written so that we can sit down for a good, enjoyable, fictional read. They haven't been written down for entertainment purposes for us. But yet, they have been written to show the evidence, eyewitness account, of Jesus being the Christ, the Son of God, and that our faith can be based upon that. Let our faith always be based on evidence. Never allow our faith to be based upon a whim or an emotion, that we just somehow feel inside that Jesus is Christ, and so therefore that's why I'm going to do this or whatever it might be. We should never have a faith of that. We should have a faith that says, I know that he is the Christ, the Son of God. It's unwavering because I didn't base my faith upon what someone else thought. I didn't base it on what I feel. I didn't base it on the fact that my parents were believers or my grandparents or anything of that nature. But I based my faith in Jesus being the Christ, the Son of God, on the evidences that have been preserved and presented to me in the gospel. The people that were alive in this day saw these things, experienced them. And on many occasions they tried to test Jesus. They tried to show Jesus as not being something, not being who he said he was, but being something else. At one point even thinking that he was working miracles by the power of the devil. Look over in James chapter 2 real fast. Faith, and the faith that we have, it's something that is to be built and to be shown out. It's not something that's to be kept secluded inside ourselves. James talks about our faith in the first two chapters of the book of James. In James chapter 2 and in verse 14, he says this, what use is it, my brethren, if someone says he has faith, but he has no works? Can that faith save him? What does he mean when he says, can that faith save him? It's that faith that he just talked about, that faith that is faith without doing anything with it. That's not accompanied with anything. It's faith that's just based upon emotion, faith that's just based on an assent to knowledge acquisition, but it's not faith that does anything. If a brother or sister, in verse 15, is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and be filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? He says, what good is the faith? Here's an example for you. Think of it that way, in the way that James speaks. He says, here's an example. A brother or sister comes to you, they're cold, they're hungry. They need something to wear, they need something to eat. You look at them and you say, be warm and be filled. Turn around and you leave. What good did you just do? Absolutely none. He said, in the same way, he's drawing the same parallel conclusion. We say, well, I have faith in Jesus, but it's not shown in your life. If you're not doing the things that he said for you to do, what good is it? Can that faith save you? That's the question that he's asking here. Look, as you continue down in the text, he says, even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead. So if you have that kind of faith, that he says right before, that tells a brother or sister that's cold, that's hungry, you just tell them to be filled and be warmed, and you don't do nothing to help them, you don't do anything about it. You have a faith like that, a faith that's not shown out, and a faith that doesn't do the things God has said, that faith is dead. There's no life to it. That's what James is saying. He says in verse 18, but someone may well say, you have faith and I have works. Don't people say that today? That's what the accusation comes to us. People say, I have faith, but you people over there at the Church of Christ, y'all got works. That's all y'all talk about is works. That's not what James is debating here. He's saying that faith is accompanied with works. They're not exclusive to one another, but they are inclusive. They include one another and they combine together in the text. Read with me here. He says, someone may well say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without the works, and I'll show you my faith by my works. It's by the things I do that shows out the faith that I have. When we were reading in class this morning in Acts chapter 11 and in verse 26, when the disciples there in Antioch are called Christians, first time that you read in your Bible about disciples being called Christians, it's not that they said, I'm a Christian. When you read that text, think about it. They were first called Christians in Antioch. People noticed about them. People knew something about them and knew the faith that they had through the life they're living. They're called Christians in Antioch. People called them that. It's amazing. People could take a note of the people around them and go, that person's emulating Christ. That person's a disciple of Christ. Faith coupled with their works. Look here in the next verse. He says in verse 19, you believe that God is one. You do well. The demons also believe and shudder. The demons believe and have fear of God. They believe in Jesus. They have fear of Jesus. They know, whereas it might be an emotional attachment that some might have, the demons know, and yet they are scared, they're unwilling to bow themselves in submission to Him. What does it say about our faith if we don't do something? If we don't have a faith that's deepened in the fact that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, what does it say about our faith? It's right on par. Right on par with the demons. They believe, they know, and they shudder. Matter of fact, if we have a faith that is just complete of, I feel it in my heart, or I was taught this way, and it's not deepened with the fact of evidence and not deepened with the fact of showing out by doing what I've been told to do and living the life I've been told to live, might I say that the demon's faith may be a little bit stronger than ours? Because they're at least willing to change and shudder, if you will, because of that faith that they have. What kind of faith do we have? Turn over to Mark chapter 1. Mark chapter 1. And in this beginning text here of Mark, he is sharing with us an incident that Jesus has, an encounter that he has with an unclean spirit. In Mark chapter 1 and in verse 21, in this encounter that he has here, they went to Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath he entered the synagogue and began to teach. And they were amazed at his teaching, for he was teaching them as one having authority, not as the scribes. They could recognize something about Jesus. In verse 23, just then there was a man in their synagogue with an unclean spirit, and he cried out. The unclean spirit cries out and says, what business do we have with each other, Jesus of Nazareth? You know, look on Jesus and know who Jesus was. Here's this unclean spirit. What business do we have? How's this going to play out, Jesus, here? Have you come to destroy us? That's your purpose? Rhetorical question. Of course he has. I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Here is an unclean spirit, and he can recognize who Jesus is. I know you. You are the Holy One of God. Jesus' power is shown here. He rebuked him, saying, be quiet. You know what? I've never encountered an unclean spirit. I've never encountered a demon. You don't hear about them after this time in the New Testament. You don't read about them a lot before then. But I'm confident in this. If I look at one that's hollering at me, and I say, be quiet, he don't have to listen to me. If I tell him as Jesus did here, be quiet and come out of him, he might look and laugh. What power do you have? What power do you have, Coy? What are you? You're just an average guy who lives in Crosby, Texas. So what? Jesus has the power to do something about it. We want to talk about evidence of Jesus being the Son of God. Here it is. In the spiritual realm, in the demon world, the unclean spirit world, Jesus has the power to rule over them. He tells one to be quiet, and it's quiet. He tells one to come out of one man, and he comes out of him. Look in the next verse. It says, throwing him into convulsions, the unclean spirit cried out with a loud voice and came out of him. That's the power of Jesus, the Son of God, being evidenced here through this miracle. Where's our faith in this Jesus who has the power to do this? This is Jesus who has the power to command all in heaven and on earth. He says, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. The text of our lesson today, where we're going to focus the remainder part of our time, is found in Matthew, the 15th chapter. There's two accounts of the story that's recounted here for us in Matthew chapter 15. The other is in Mark chapter 7, and so we'll kind of be between the two this morning for a lot of our time together. Mark chapter 7 and Matthew chapter 15. I want to take Matthew's account to begin with, to talk about the faith that this Canaanite woman has here in Matthew chapter 15. Look down in verse 21. It says, Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon, and a Canaanite woman from that region came out and began to cry out, saying, have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed. Now, we've already read in Mark chapter 1 at an event that happened prior to this that Jesus has the power to do something about it. Yet, this is an interesting account that happens here. It's a Canaanite woman that is mentioned here in Mark's account in Mark chapter 7 and in verse 26. Mark adds this about her. He says, now the woman was a Gentile. So here is a woman who is Gentile and yet not someone of the house of Israel. It's important to understand that because of the way Jesus deals with her in the following verses. Now, we spent a lot of time in class talking about the difference between Jew and Gentile and how the Gentile would have been viewed by the Jew. The Jew would have said it's unclean, would have said unholy. The Gentile, I can't even associate with them. And yet, here is one that's come to Jesus, and she has this daughter with a demon that is demon-possessed. In verse 23 of Matthew chapter 15, notice Jesus' response. In verse 22, she said, have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed. But he did not answer her a word. How rude of him. Doesn't listen to her. Look how it continues. His disciples came and implored him, saying, send her away because she keeps shouting at us. But he answered and said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. See the distinction between Jew and Gentile here? And she came and began to bow down before him, saying, Lord, help me. And he answered and said, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. And she said, yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from the master's table. And then Jesus said to her, old woman, your faith is great. We talked about and we laid the foundation for this of where our faith is, what our faith is built upon, the faith built on evidence, a faith that's not devoid of works, but a faith that includes the works which we have been told to do. And yet he says here to this woman, your faith is great. I'd love it if Jesus told me that one day. If he said, oh, Coy, your faith is great. Notice what he does. It says, it shall be done for you as you wish. And her daughter was healed at once. Immediate, full healing of this woman's daughter. She was persistent in her asking. We have, as I've mentioned, the additional insight that Mark includes in his account in Mark chapter 7. But it's interesting that you see this here. In a book, a letter that Matthew writes to Jews. We made mention of that last Sunday night. Here is a letter to Jews. He starts in chapter 1 about genealogy. Who cares about genealogy? Jews do. When you get to chapter 4 and chapter 9, you see this book in that he talks about the miracles that are performed there and the teaching that he does there. And in chapters 8, 9, and 10, there's 10 miracles that are performed. 10 a complete number to the Jew. So here Matthew is writing to the Jews, and you see through the gospel accounts that the writer has a specific aspect or angle that he's coming at each time. And when he writes to the Jews here, he includes a story about a Gentile woman. A Gentile who has this interaction, whom Jesus tells that you have great faith. Something important to understand about this, that Matthew knew she was a Gentile. He doesn't include that in the story, but it's enough to just say she's a Canaanite woman. And the people, the Jews that would read this, would understand that she is yet a Gentile. You know what the Jews thought. The Jews thought, I don't want anything to do with that Gentile. And the Gentiles don't have any part in what I have with God. They think, I have the exclusive rights to the Son of God. I've got exclusive rights to the Messiah. He's mine. He's for the house of Israel. Her request, she appeals to that at the beginning. Look there in the text in verse 22. She says this as much as she appeals to him. She says, have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. Now, he's not Son of David in this sense that he's David's child. He's a descendant, but he's not. It's not like saying that's my child, son of, or daughter of. But yet, she's making an appeal back to the promises given to David, the Messiah. Messianic is the way that this is referred to. Some indication this woman had an understanding of the promises from 2 Samuel chapter 7 that were given to David some 1,000 years before. It's interesting that she starts off by recognizing who Jesus is. She recognizes him as Messiah. She recognizes him as Son of David. That's saying he's king. Oh Lord, you're king by the descendant of David, by the promise to David. You might read it and think of it in that way. How did she know? How did she know that this Jesus was the Messiah? How did she know that he was king? That he was ruling because he was the Messiah of promise. He didn't look like one. When you talk about a king, when I think about a king, they come in their majesty, they look the part. They wear the crown, the jewelry, they've got the people and the soldiers around them, and the people hold them and hoist them on high. That's not how Jesus came when he came sneaking into town. Because that's the exact same that he was doing. When you read in Mark's account, you see he's trying to sneak into the house nobody sees. No army with him. No entourage is following through Jesus as he comes into Capernaum, as he's entering this. No glory, just this guy, Jesus, going about teaching and preaching. And yet she calls him Messiah when she says Son of David. Interesting. She, a Gentile, a Canaanite, knew and had the perception that the Jews seemed to not. She knew that he was Lord. I don't know where she got the faith. I don't know where she got the knowledge about Jesus. I don't know if she heard about it before. I don't know if she was taught it sometime. I don't know, but she got it somewhere. And she had enough faith that it was coupled with confidence in Jesus. As a Gentile, no advantage. She didn't have any advantage over the Jew. The Jew has all the advantage here. The Jew has the tradition. The Jew has the Feast of Remembrance. The Jew has the synagogue. And what does that mean? So what? They got the synagogue. That's teaching. They can go and they can hear and learn about the prophets and the teachings of old. And yet, remarkably, she says, here he is, Son of David. There's something about that we can learn. To understand who this Jesus is. This is Jesus who has the power to heal, and not just that. In the text you see he has the compassion and the love to do so also. She doesn't just stop with one request. She doesn't just stop after he doesn't listen the first time. She felt like she could get an audience with Jesus. Look in chapter 7 of Mark. And in verse 26, you might put a marker there as I did, or put your fingers between the two. We'll turn between them for just a little bit here in our study. In Mark chapter 7 and verse 26, in the last part of the verse, notice what it says. It says, now the woman was a Gentile, the Syrophoenician race, and she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. She kept on asking. Not just one time. She didn't just let it go after once, but she kept asking. In Matthew's account in chapter 15 and verse 22, the Canaanite woman from the region came out and began to cry out, saying, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." She's asking. She keeps asking, but Jesus' response is nothing. Didn't say a word. Someone talks to you, and you don't even have a response back. Perhaps this was a lesson for the Jews that were with him as much as it was for the Gentile woman. Perhaps it was a lesson just as much for everybody else to notice as it was for her. How will we respond when someone comes along and yet we treat them like a Gentile? Jesus is teaching the lesson here. We might look at this and say, how dare he not respond to her? But isn't that exactly what the Jew would have done? Jesus here knows exactly what he's doing. Remember, he's the master teacher. He's teaching the lesson here, either because he knows her faith, either he's testing her faith. Whatever reason, he doesn't say a word to her. You know what it turns out to be? It demonstrates her faith. He didn't answer her. But that didn't stop her from asking. What of us? When we pray and we ask God and we say we have faith, we just mention it in passing, right? We just mention something we want, desire, we might ask or petition to God, and we let it go. A time or two, if we don't have that immediate gratification from it, that immediate answer, we stop. Where's our faith? The faith of this woman that kept on asking, and the commendation that came to it when Jesus said that she had great faith. It turned out to be a demonstration that she kept on asking and asking, a demonstration of her faith. Notice how the disciples look at it. In verse 23 of chapter 15 of Matthew says, "He did not answer her a word, and his disciples came and implored him, saying, 'Send her away. She keeps shouting at us.'" If we were with Jesus and following along with him, and here's this woman, and she keeps asking and keeps asking and keeps asking, it's like the kid that just keeps hollering, "Mom, Mom, Mom, Mom." Eventually gets old, even if you're not the mom. You're tired of hearing about that. The disciples get tired of hearing from her. Like I say, maybe the lesson is just as much for them as it was for her. She's asking, she's shouting, and the disciples say, "She's an irritation. Jesus, why don't you get rid of her?" Yet, it's a learning opportunity. Because she was a Gentile. They thought it was just limited to the Jews. Here's this woman in his ministry. This is a Gentile, and he shows love and compassion to her. Notice verse 25. When he answers her in verse 24, he answered and said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and began to bow down before him. In Mark's account in chapter 7, he says it this way: she worshiped him. Here's public for all to see. She bows down and worships God right before him. She is showing public worship to him. All the more remarkable that she is a Gentile. He says there in verse 21 that there's this withdrawing from there. They're trying to hide Jesus, and yet public worship that's happening right there before him. She tries to get so he's trying to just get away for a little bit, and yet this woman is here and she is persistent. Jesus is trying to relax a little bit, if you might say, trying to get away from him, but he couldn't escape notice. This woman followed him right to where he was. She wasn't to be deterred. Remember, she has great faith. Notice verse 28 of Matthew chapter 15. Jesus says to her, "O woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. We made mention of this last week, just in passing. Here's Jesus. We want evidence as to who he is. We've seen many so far this morning. But here it is, there's a little girl, her daughter, demon-possessed, and Jesus, just at His word, can command them out at once. Where's the daughter? No indication the daughter is with her. Distance doesn't mean anything to Jesus. Why not? Because He is God. He knows. He doesn't have to be there, but He knows. He's not there, but He knows. And it's done. The demon in the spiritual world between man and God, some kind of angelic world that was allowed in the first century, several serve as demonstration in the New Testament for us as to the power of Jesus over all powers, even over all dominions. There's no power that exists that supersedes or is seen or is unseen that is above Jesus the Christ. You know, the demons knew, and yet they were unwilling to bow. He has power over them. He has dominion. He tells it to be gone, and so it is gone. Look over in Mark's account in chapter 7, this time down in verse 29. We haven't read verse 29 before, but look at this in this way. He says in Matthew's account that her faith is great, and he puts it this way after her response. He says, because of this answer. So she's shown her faith time and again in her answer that she gives. He says, because of this answer, go. The demon has gone out of your daughter. Do you know this miracle here that he performs shows his power? How old was this little girl? I don't know. Doesn't say. What was her IQ level? Did you read that in there as we were reading the account? I didn't see it. What kind of faith did the daughter have? It wasn't contingent upon her faith, was it? It wasn't contingent upon the faith that she has, but just the fact or reality that she had this and her mother's faith that was shown through in the request that she had of Jesus. Jesus is working miracles. He is showing His power to build faith. Miracles, certainly, with an element of compassion, no doubt about that, but more than compassion. In Matthew's account, chapter 15 and verse 24, He answered and said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So here's this point that He's trying to make. He's saying, I just came to Israel. Remember, it's about her faith. That doesn't stop her. Lord, help me, she continues to say. He says verse 25, Lord, help me. Verse 26, He answered and said, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. You think He's insulting this woman when He says this? The children's food, in other words, He's saying, I came for the house of Israel. Take their food and throw it to the dogs. Certainly the Jews there might have been saying, yeah, you tell her. You let her know. That would have been how they viewed them. But no, He's not calling her a dog at all. He's sharing an analogy, a test of her faith. The lesson is for His disciples that were there, how they would view the Gentiles. And she says, yes, Lord, even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from their master's table. Even us poor old little Gentiles need what You have. We need what You have, Jesus. You are great, You are powerful, You are compassionate. And she's saying, I may not be an Israelite, but You're Lord. And You can do what You determined to do, God. And You can do these things because I have confidence in You. You care. He's not putting her down, but drawing an analogy to teach. It's not always offending. The gospel message He's teaching is that the gospel is for all. It's a lesson that takes a while for them all to learn. They're just starting to get it by the time we get to about Acts chapter 10 and 11. They're just starting to figure it out. Here, the Jews might have agreed with the dog, but there's a lesson there for us all. God's not exclusive to just the Jews, but offers His salvation and His power to all. It's not just us that live in America because we are a quote-unquote Christian nation, that He just shines His goodness upon us. It's not just us that it's available to. But all, every soul that's ever been. Our faith is based upon that. So, how do we compare? We talked this at the beginning of our lesson about faith that is shown through evidence. Faith that is based in our obedience and to what He would have us to do. Faith that's shown through our works. Faith that people can notice that we're a Christian, a disciple, a follower of Christ. How does our faith compare to this Canaanite woman here? How does our faith compare? Do we live in the faith and have the faith of His love and compassion? Do we have the faith that knows that He can do it if we but ask? Do we have even the faith to ask in the first place? I realize that the age of miracles has passed, that we see like this in this sense, the sense of that God puts the power of miracles into man's hands to work them. That's past. But I'm going to say this, I don't know what God does today, whatever He determines. Whatever He determines to do, I don't know if He works miracles anymore or not. But I know He can if He wants to. I don't care what state you're in or how life is. Do we have the faith in Jesus that this woman did? The faith that says, just ask. I know that He can and is able to do. Maybe they are a nobody. Just a little old Gentile woman with a little girl at the house that's demon possessed. Do we just have the faith to ask? The faith to put it all in Jesus. The faith to put all of our life into Him and Him being the Son of God. Even though it may just seem like nothing. Even though those around us may say, I wish He would stop. Do we have the faith to just keep going? Do we know and understand that He cares for us? Do we know that even the dogs eat from the crumbs? So maybe I am not someone famous. Maybe I am not someone powerful. And maybe I'm not someone with great influence, but Jesus still cares about little old me. Do we trust Him? Do we put our all in all and faith in Him that He cares for us? That's the faith that I hope to have, I hope to build to. Such great faith like this Canaanite woman. That's our lesson this morning. I appreciate your attention and following along with me in our Bible study together. We've got a song selected this morning we're going to use as an encouragement to you. If your faith is to a point that you're ready to put Him on in baptism, that means that you know that He is the Christ, the Son of God. That's what He demands for us to do. That's what He demands for us to do in our faithful obedience to Him, to care. We've got to have that connection with His blood. That comes through baptism in the water. There's no power in the water. Power's in His blood. Or, if you need the prayers of the congregation, sometimes we stray. He wants us to come on back. If you need the prayers and encouragement of the group, if we can help you with that, take advantage of the opportunity afforded to us this morning. Come to the front, let us know as we stand together and as we sing.